go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. Our guest is Patrick Poole for a very special hour-long conversation about the state of jihad in America and what we ought to be learning from our friends and others overseas who are also being subjected to one kind or another of the jihad. And Patrick, one of the, well, I would like to say the gold standard, really, of counterterrorism in the United States for most of the period since 9/11 has been the New York Police Department, the NYPD, notably under its previous commissioner, Ray Kelly. Under a new commissioner, Bill Bratton, who actually had previously headed it up, and the present mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio, we've seen a settlement recently with a sort of what I think of as the red-green axis that had brought suit against the NYPD. Talk about that case, if you would, and what the implications are of that settlement for New York's finest.
Well, I think the most problematic element of that was the censorship of the radicalization report, which came out in 2007, which outlined process and the organizations by which radicalization inside the Muslim community happens. And the bizarre thing is that as much as even the federal government wanted this report suppressed, but in fact a DOJ study, a Justice Department study, found exactly the exact same thing. So it's curious whether the Justice Department is going to, censor itself on the findings of the radicalization process. And it's a, as you said, the NYPD has been undoubtedly the most vigilant in terms of its counterterrorism policies, and been very successful in that regard, even despite sometimes the federal authorities. And I do think immediate family members who are living in New York City that, the efforts to shut down with the NYPD to know what's happening in the community, I'm not signing off on everything the NYPD was doing. And they have even said, look, we were just, trying to find out what was happening in these communities. I think it's going to end up getting New Yorkers killed.
One of the issues, Patrick, as you know, has been surveillance of the mosques and having NYPD personnel undercover in there just to monitor what's been going on. Given what we were just talking about France and what it's discovered, given what we've discussed so far in the program about several of these Muslim Brotherhood mosques, given what you know more generally about some of the favored speakers who are brought around, and including but not limited to Tariq Ramadan, Saraj Wahaj, for example, people who are known to be advocates of jihad and working to bring others to it. Is this kind of surveillance not absolutely necessary, and not just in New York City, but elsewhere across the country?
Well, Frank, I think with respect to the surveillance issue is that what the proponents of no surveillance whatsoever, they're creating the conditions in which Muslims are going to be more under inspection, because we hear, these advocates saying, who basically use the Muslim community as a human shield for the extremists. And when something happens, much as it did after 9/11, when most of the surveillance took place in New York, were the, years immediately following that, when the next event happens, then, once again, it's going to be the entire Muslim community rather than these known hot spots of jihad. It's not rocket science. These nodes of radicalization, which the NYPD radicalization report talked about, like the Muslim Student Associations, you know, these mosques. You know, there's a mosque in Bay Ridge there in Brooklyn that's been problematic for years. And in fact, in one case, one of the parishioners went to the mosque, heard this extremist sermon, and then he went out and shot up a van full of Orthodox Jewish students, killing one on the Brooklyn Bridge back in the 90s. So, I mean, it's not a great mystery. And again, these advocates want to use the Muslim community as a human shield to prevent any, you know, any in-depth look into these extremist hotspots.
It makes, in a way, the larger point, Patrick, which would, I think you would agree, and that is if we keep reaching out to the wrong Muslims, if we keep empowering them, if we keep legitimating them as the leaders of the community, there's much less space for Muslims who don't want to be part of any effort to impose Sharia in this country, don't want to live under it themselves, for that matter, to be effective alternatives or oppositions to this, and thereby create, as you say, problems probably for the community writ large. Patrick, before we run out of time, I do want to ask you about your insights into all of this arising from your in-depth reporting and investigative trips to Egypt. I think you've made two of them now, if I'm not mistaken. Give us sort of a flavor of where that most populous of Arab nations is at the moment, and whether the work that President al-Sisi has been engaged in against the Muslim Brotherhood and other extremists in his country is bearing fruit or is faltering, and our role in that matter.
Well, Frank, it's my experience in Egypt. I was there for most of September, and I'm about to head back. One of the amazing things is what we were just talking about, the elements within the Muslim community, I mean, who are concerned about the U.S. Obama administration policies and embrace of the Muslim Brotherhood. And we see this particularly over in Egypt, where you had the largest recorded protests in human history, 30 million people or more taking the streets to Egypt to overthrow the Muslim Brotherhood regime back in 2013. And it's a question I get asked by virtually every Egyptian I meet is, what is up with the U.S. Policies? I mean, we've gotten rid of the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, Egypt is in an existential struggle against the Muslim Brotherhood right now. And, you know, why is the Obama administration continuing to embrace these people? I mean, they feel insulted that, hey, we got rid of these guys and you're still promoting them. You know, you still have these Muslim Brotherhood delegations traipsing through, you know, over to the State Department.
To say nothing of the Muslim Brotherhood operatives in this country that are always being feted at the, you know, Eid dinners and the like, but also called upon to help inform and guide this so-called CVE policy. And Patrick, we'll have to pause in another moment. Let me just tie this up by saying that you've been asked a pregnant question. It kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier with respect to the administration's domestic policies. And when we come back, I want to just see what you're saying to your Egyptian interlocutors is animating U.S. policy and what that policy is really doing in the course of this existential threat to what is arguably one of our most important allies in opposing the jihad, namely the Sisi government. We'll be finishing up our conversation with Patrick Poole in our final segment right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.